everyone. My name is Emily Escorcia. I'm your host, and you guys are tuned in to Talk About It. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning back in. As always, I'm Emmy, your host. And this week, we're going to be talking about my personal journey with happiness. I am going to be sharing with you everything that pretty much I experienced and the ups and downs of my emotional journey with happiness, and some of the tips, tricks, and dangers to avoid as far as my experience and what I can share with you. As far as my life right now, I'm so happy to announce that I have officially graduated from my master's in communication, and I most likely am going to continue my education into psychology, as I've mentioned before, because I just want to give back as much as I can. And although I'm experiencing everything I learned for myself, I also want to give back. So a lot of my friends are now like, Emmy, just take a nap. And so instead, this is what I like to do with my time off. I am very grateful for the opportunity to even do something like this, because I know it's a privilege to even go to school. So big shout out to not only my parents for being able to give me that opportunity, but also myself and my support system in getting me through that battle, because it was both emotional and physical and all of the things really that you think are student life. It's true. It's hard, and it's late nights and lack of sleep and avoiding social life, but it's totally worth it because the lessons I learned, I can truly apply to every single day of my life. And now I'm sharing it with you guys. So I am very blessed to say that as of right now, today, I am happy. Genuinely, genuinely happy to the core of my being. Even when I have days that I cry or have a tantrum or my emotions get the best of me, I am still genuinely happy. And it's very human not to be happy all the time. Life is just going to throw wrenches at you, whether you like it or not, left and right. Either you catch them or you don't, and some of them are going to bust your head open. So you just got to be ready. And I think that's really what happiness is at its core. Being prepared emotionally for the wrenches that life is going to throw at you, and choosing to look at whatever problem is in front of you with not only an optimistic lens, but also a realistic lens. And I know that everybody's reality is objective, and of course it's internal. However, what are my opportunities here? How can I make this better for myself? Can I make this better for myself? Am I stuck? Am I better off learning to let it go? Those are all things that stem from a happy core, I feel. When I was a child, I would think of happiness as freedom and my opportunity to express myself, to create. And like I said before, reality is objective and everybody's reality is different. They live in their own reality, their own bubble. And so as a child, I lived in this very freeing bubble where my parents allowed me to play in the mud, play with the paint, you know, say silly things, play with Legos, wear tomboy shirts, and go to sports games. I had freedom. And so that, to me, today is still kind of happiness. There's more to it than that, obviously, like I mentioned before. But in general, freedom and having that ability to create and express and find opportunities for yourself, choosing to look for those opportunities and creating joy for yourself in your life, that is happiness, definitely. And with that comes the opportunity to never feel stuck or obligated in really anything. And it comes with removing the word "I can't" from your children's vocabulary. And my parents did a really great job of that. I never grew up thinking that I couldn't do something. Everything in my life had opportunity, except for death. Everything in life, you can make it better. I'm not saying that you can fix the problem, because sometimes, you know, maybe you have a chemical imbalance, but you can go to a psychiatrist if you have access to that, or go to a doctor and seek therapy in some sort. You can make your situation better, more digestible, more accessible. It doesn't necessarily fix the issue, but that is the type of expression of freedom and happiness that my parents gave to me, where it's like, never stick yourself in this corner. Don't ever feel like you can't do something. You can. You just have to work for it and find those areas of opportunity. It's not something that just you wake up and you're happy. You know, it doesn't work like that. It's definitely something that you have to work on internally. And I keep mentioning therapy, and I know that's not for everyone. Not everybody likes it. And it's a privilege to begin with. However, internal work and shadow work that you can have in yourself, in your home, with a dark pillow, just like crying it out, you can do all these things and battle your internal demons and framing that people have framed your mind for you, and rewire your own definition of joy, of value. Give yourself a mental fucking hug and cut yourself some slack. A lot of what we feel is what we have been taught to feel. So you do have to sit with yourself and ask yourself, how do I really feel about things? Everything that we experience now as adults, and if you're a teenager and you're growing up, everything that we are is molded off of our experiences and off of the people who raise us or guide us throughout our life. Now, sometimes that might be for the best, sometimes that might be for the worst. And it is your job as an adult who's trying to grow and find their own way in this crazy world to realize, where have I been molded by others? Do I agree with it? Would I like to change it? What can I do to make myself feel better about it? Or did they do a great job and I can, you know, live a happy life knowing that these are the lessons that have been taught to me? All of the above are necessary to work through. It is important to know where you were taught and where you just experienced something for yourself, because those are two very different things. And you live your life through those lenses at all times, including how you perceive happiness and your own value, why you become happy in general. Placing your internal value and your value as a person onto something else will shift how you experience happiness. Every single one of us has an inner artist, an inner creator that can form, you know, pockets of happiness and distraction and entertainment for our own lives. And these forms of expression often rub off into our identity and our personality later on in life. Being able to express yourself and have that freedom to be yourself as a kid allows you to become more open-minded and just more aware of yourself as an adult. You can certainly become aware of yourself without having to be raised in this type of household, because like I said before, it's not accessible to everyone, and that's totally understandable. Now, what my parents taught me about happiness was more about experiencing and being present. Like saying that working to make your money to pay your bills is important. However, it is not more important than being with your family and experiencing life together and being present with the people who love you and you love. And that was very adamant in my house, like all across the board. The bills were paid, food was in the fridge, all of that was taken care of, thank God. But if it wasn't, we would still see value in the little slice of love and family that we had at home. And that's what my parents tried to push on me a lot. And so as an adult, I, you know, tell my loved ones, if I had no money in the world, I would still value you as a person. If me and you had no money to share between each other, I would still want to spend time with you and speak to you and be with you and be your friend and be your loved one. Because that's what love is to me, and happiness in a relationship is being there for one another and truly caring about the other person. And so that kind of model that my parents gave me was very healthy, thankfully, but it did put money on a back burner. And when I was such an artsy little weird kid, I would lean into these ideas of being an artist or a creator or a dancer or anything like that in the future. And my parents would say, no, but you're not gonna make money. And it was very contrasting to the other idea that we just talked about. So it was like, how can I find happiness in my career? But everybody talks about money. And at the end of the day, they were right. Everything does cost money, especially in the United States. It's not like in other countries where you can probably live off of less, or the society allows you to live off of less. Some things require financial support and life in general to get ahead. Whether we like it or not, there are certain steps that do require financial need. And capitalism in general, as the debate in the United States, we can say is this vicious circle. And so my parents were very aware of that, and they made us aware of that too. So even if I wanted to be an artist, how was I going to make money? Was I going to make it a business? Was I going to be a private artist? Did I need to go to school and become an art historian? Stuff like that. And so, you know, that dream got kind of smashed. And so I started leaning into the idea of being a lawyer and making money, but also putting the bad guy in jail and what that would look like. And my parents were totally on board because, as you know, if you're a brown or black kid in the United States, if you say lawyer, doctor, nurse, any of that, engineer, they are like seeing stars, so happy for you. So those ideas were obviously super supported. And then we roll into growing up as a kid, being the new kid, being the smart kid. And new kid, I mean, like every few years I was going to a different school. It's not really because I, you know, had to. My parents really wanted me to go to the best school possible without having to pay for like private school. And so they would put me into like these application programs or magnet programs and let me do auditions and all these different things to get into the best school possible that was fitted for me and whatever I wanted to do. But that also meant that I didn't know anybody in the school when I came in. And if you are from Miami, you probably know that most of the people you ended up in high school with went to the same middle school and went to the same elementary, went to the same kindergarten. You know, as the new kid coming into school, like I didn't have friends coming in. I had to make friends every time. And what happens to the new kid at every school? And yeah, you can pretty much guess I got bullied. And I would fight back. I was a fighter, still kind of am. And so I'd never let it get the best of me in front of them, but it was eating me up inside at home. And they would attack me for basically everything. My body, my parents' accents, being the new kid, having signs of being a dyke, using those words, you know. Being told that I was a bitch, being told that I was a whore, being told that I was sleeping with their man or trying to, being told that I was stealing their best friend when really I was just trying to make friends at the school, being told that I was a slut because I texted one guy that turned out to be, you know, a slutty guy in the school that I had no idea about because I was new. And so all these different things that just kind of were around. And even as a kid, I looked at it and would realize it was a lot of their own insecurities, especially the whole friendship thing. I had a lot of problems when I would try and make friends with a guy who turned out to have a girlfriend that I didn't know about. Or I would play football in the morning with all the boys and I wasn't making out with all of them. And then I was told, oh, you must be a dyke. And then the rumors that I was sleeping with them, then that I was a whore, you know? And so all these different things where it's like, I'm just trying to, you know, do my best as the new kid and be friendly and, you know, do whatever I need to just be okay in middle school, high school, elementary school, because it was really at almost every level. What made the biggest difference for me is that I had self-confidence. I knew that I wasn't, you know, this terrible person. And I knew that I wasn't this slutty person that was, you know, sleeping with everyone. And even if you were, that's not their business. And, even if I was bi, I didn't know it yet, I wasn't out of the closet, and I didn't think the word dyke was appropriate, and I would get bullied for, like, my sister being in the military. They called her a dyke, and I got in a fight for that. Like, it was some stupid shit, and it's literally just other people having insecurities about, oh, my friend is talking to somebody else, they're not going to be my friend anymore, and of course, these are kids, so it's not the same now as an adult, looking back, but when you're a kid, I'm sure even if I found this person and spoke to them now, they would apologize and say, oh, I was just a stupid kid. But yeah, that's the truth, is that you have these insecurities as a kid that you don't know how to communicate and you put them onto other people. And so if you're out there and you're listening to this because you are feeling these, you know, situations and somebody is bullying you or making you feel bad about X, Y, and Z, and you feel like maybe it's just not true, accept the fact that it's not true in your life
and accept it as being good enough, because their own mentality, they're always going to be limited. Don't try and explain it away. I used to, you know, in the beginning, I would try and explain, no, I'm just trying to make friends and I'm not trying to steal anybody from you. But doesn't matter. It didn't matter. They would continue to, you know, fight me and do things to me and or say things to me. And I was just like, it's not worth the energy. Even as a kid, I would be like, dude, it's not worth it. And that's hard, because then you turn around and you're like, I'm still the new kid with no friends. So that still kind of sucked. But I had a really good support system at home, and I had, you know, my swimming friends. So luckily they weren't too bad. At least some of them weren't so bad. And so how did I fight back? Yes, one, I would get into physical fights and, you know, fight people and be aggressive, because that's who I was as a angsty teenager. But I would also, you know, really care about wanting to be included. And that was so detrimental mentally as a kid, because it was this idea of like, I don't have somewhere that I fit in, and I'm never going to fit in, and I'm never going to feel like I have a place. When in reality, there was lots of little places for me. I've had a lot of friends because of my attempts at being just a good person to everyone, really. Like, sometimes I was misunderstood and sometimes I came off wrong, but for the most part, I was accepting of literally everyone. If you were a goth, if you were a punk, if you were an athlete, if you were a Catholic kid, like, it didn't matter. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to hear your story. Not necessarily be your friend, because some people didn't stick around, but I wanted to just kind of like sit in the conversation.
Vulnerability and the vulnerability in other people's stories was very valuable to me, but I had no idea what to do with it. I didn't really know how to relate to people until I was an adult. I knew I was a safe space for a lot of my friends and even family, because my family was like that. We always knew that we can come and talk to each other, but sometimes they didn't really help you past that. They would listen to you, and then they would maybe give you advice that was not really that helpful, or they would run away from the problem and be like, okay, well, go deal with your feelings in your room. Bye, have a great day. So those were the moments where, as a kid and trying to have conversations with new people in new schools, I was open and I wanted to have other people be open to me, but I grew up with this idea of not only hyper-discipline for myself, but also the idea that the world is very cruel. And so at the same time that my parents told me there's nothing you can't do, they also told me, but everyone is going to try and stop you. I didn't know how to be vulnerable. I didn't know what it was like to allow people to be vulnerable near me. All of those things were very nuanced, and I wasn't sure what to do. If you also grew up in a conservative house like I did, you were often lied to for your own benefit. Something that they maybe wanted to keep from you because you weren't ready to hear, or they thought that it was not appropriate for you, you would just straight up be lied to. You would be told something else, be told that it was not your place to speak about it, ask about it, bring it up, none of the above. And so I grew up very skeptical about strangers and even people within my circle because of things that people in my circle would tell me about them. And all of this animosity and defensiveness that was always out in the open in my inner circle was just room for being a skeptic about strangers. And the bullying obviously didn't help, but I chose to only open myself up to select people, which made me put up a huge wall for a lot of other people. And I rejected rules and expectations of others because of the amount of hate that I experienced and felt from the outside coming in. So, for example, listening to the gossip about other people in my family or my friends or anything from people that I trusted or believed had the best interest for me made me feel like I could not trust that many people. And so those expectations will also kill your joy. Falling into the expectations of other people based off of what they want to create as your reality is going to limit you, and it's going to kill your own happiness because you don't get to just experience it for yourself and make up your own mind. That same expectation is also what kind of ruined me and my self-esteem as a teenager, because adults put expectations onto children very often. And sometimes it's for the best because they want what's best for you and they think that you have a lot of capability. But I did feel berated with my appearance and my self-esteem and how people think of me. Those types of expectations, especially on my body as an athlete or as a teenager or growing woman, were hugely influential. Up until my teenage years, or up until I was in athletics, I never even thought of my body more than just keeping me alive and being active and being almost like a machine to do things. Until adults chose to speak for me and chose to speak for my body. And again, it's the difference of experience and expectation and these rules and regulations that people put on you that you have to work through as an adult. Adults had a lot of expectations on me, and I felt like I wasn't meeting those expectations. I didn't even speak English when I started school, so I had to start an ESOL. And there was a lot of different things that kind of developed this really, really high personal expectation. Not only on myself, but people would put it on me because they were adults that thought that they were doing the best for me. Most of the time, that's great. Most of the time, it's also really hurtful. Your intentions might be good, but, you know, weighing your athletes in front of other people and putting it down on a chart where, like, everybody has to see those numbers, that's not beneficial. Keeping track of your athletes' weights for your own coaching necessities, absolutely, that might be needed. And so that's the type of environment that I was in. People had good intentions about my athleticism and losing weight and looking a specific way, being slim, being active, spending all my free time in the weight room or in the water or whatever. And that also took away from my life as a kid, which I don't regret it at all. I look back on my experience as a swimmer and I'm so blessed, because without it, I would not be where I'm at. However, those expectations that were placed on me I've had to really work through them as an adult, because I have to force myself into self-care and force myself into periods of rest. Because the same high expectations that adults would put on me and that these kids would bully me about, I would put on myself, and I would look in the mirror and I'd be like, you know what? You could be smarter. You know what? You could be skinnier. You know what? You could do this and that. Maybe they're right. Maybe I should do this. And then that created the idea of value with productivity and success. And so happiness, to me, almost mutated from what I originally thought as a kid to be freedom, and now it warped into this almost monster of success, where it's like, if I'm not winning, I'm miserable. And it was really so toxic, where I was putting myself into these situations. Even my parents, they kind of knew to leave me alone, because I was my own little demon. Like, I woke myself up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to morning practices. I would drive myself if I had the car. I would, you know, pack my own bags for whatever meet was necessary. I would get in my weight room by myself. Nobody had to be telling me, not even my coach had to push me, because I was in the mirror attacking myself, telling myself, you need to do more, you need to be better, you need to wake up earlier, you need to sleep less, you need to study more, you need to do this, that, do that. And on paper, 4.0 GPA, star athlete, looked incredible, in shape to the gods, beautiful, bronzed, and brain. And in the back of my mind was nothing but stress and terror and just, I'm a demon. I need to do this. I need to do that. You're such a bad person. You're not good enough. You need to do this more. And it was just driving myself to the point of no return.
At this point was also when I experienced my first, like, panic, manic attack, whatever you want to call it. I was not diagnosed, hadn't gone to a therapist or clinician at any point, obviously. And coming from the type of family I come from, you are not depressed. You have nothing to be depressed about. You don't have any type of chemical imbalance in your brain either. You are perfect, and there's no such thing as being depressed and having anxiety in a brown home.
So I'm not saying that to their detriment, because now they obviously think very differently and they've been more exposed. But at the time when I was 16 and going through these emotions, I didn't feel I had that circle of trust, and I didn't come to them with these feelings. And I also didn't feel like I had an avenue of opportunity for therapy or, you know, medical help. But I had a full attack where I really looked at myself and I was like, I have demons that I don't understand. I have feelings that I don't know how to get ahead of and get control of. And I don't know if I can ever surpass these, you know, this mentality of, can I succeed at everything? No, you can't succeed at everything. Am I willing to accept that I can't succeed? And am I willing to accept that I'm going to fail over and over and over again? Am I willing to accept that I'm a disappointment? Am I willing to accept that people have expectations of me and they're going to be disappointed? Because around this time, I also had a lot of injuries physically with swimming, and I felt like I could not perform at the level that I needed to anymore. And I felt like, what am I going to do? Do I need surgery? Do I need to quit swimming? Do I need to talk to my parents about this? Are they going to be devastated? Imagine how much money they've spent putting all these pressures on myself, which is not fair as a child to put that on yourself, because really, like, my parents never made me feel like, oh, you're responsible for money or nothing. None of that. It was just this self-obsession with expectation and success because of all the expectations that had been placed on me by other people that I allowed in. And so that manifested into this horrible panic attack around like 16 or 17. It was like my first one. I did it in like a friend's driveway, poor thing. But it was just this culmination of feelings like, I can't do this anymore. And I really thought that I didn't have too many outs at that point. I did have a point where I was suicidal and I felt like, I can't keep this up anymore. Like, I can't do this. And I don't even know why I'm like, I feel this way, and I just can't be here anymore. And I'm so sad all the time. And it was really because I was putting so much pressure on myself and listening to literally everyone except my own heart. And I'll never forget it. And I hope she's not listening to this, but she might be. My niece, Elsa, she really saved my life, because when I was like 17 or so, or 16, I was really just like looking at a bottle of pills and like, oh my God, is this really the answer? And in that moment, when I was looking at that bottle, my niece ran through the door and she was like, Memily, like she was looking for me. And I threw that bottle of pills in the corner and I was like, no, never again. And, you know, I've had a few flirty moments with those feelings again after some tragic incidents in my past we'll get to. But I really felt that day was the day where I saved myself. I looked at myself in the mirror. I was like 16 or 17. And I was like, you need to fix this. And you can fix this. And it starts at the root. And so what was the root? The root was like listening to everything that was going on around me. And so I attacked the people who I felt were like really contributing to this mental breakdown. And I told them, like, if you don't back the fuck off, I'm going to just cut you out of my life and just never look back. And ever since that decision, really, it's been about what is the best for me mentally, because it just wasn't okay to have to get to that point and have my little 5-year-old niece running through the door and, you know, her voice snapping me out of it. You know, that's not okay, especially as a teenager. And so those types of thoughts come with putting so much pressure on yourself and not being able to be just yourself, including how you communicate when you say, I'm tired. I need to not go to practice today. I need to call a sick day at work. I need to snuggle my dog for 4 hours. Like, those little moments are what save you along the way, because life doesn't get less stressful. You just find a way to feel less stressed. And the only way you can do that is accepting what can and cannot happen. It's just not, you know, there's facts of the case that when you're looking in front of a problem, there's just facts. Some things are going to happen, some things are not. Some things might
happen, some things might not. And those are also forms of acceptance. And then finally, like I mentioned in the beginning, finding your own solutions. What can I do about the situation? Can I do anything about the situation? And if you can't, letting it go. Because that's another thing, that when you drive yourself to these, your own pressures, or listening to the pressures of other people, you have to know when to let it go. You have to know when it does not serve you. And that takes time, of course, because it's a personal journey, and you'll have to call a therapist probably to walk you through that. But for the most part, you have to know your own boundary and knowing when to listen and who to listen to. Because that was the other thing that I had. I had some people who really loved me, really supported me, really had my back, and some people who really fucking didn't, and swore that they did, and told me that they did, and will tell you that they do. And it comes up and again and back, and they have different faces. Pay attention. The people who are actively in your life, care about you when you're down in the dumps, and they ask you, are you okay? Can I help you? Those are the people that care about you. Not just the ones that are paying attention to your every single move. Just because they pay attention doesn't mean they care. Caring is, I genuinely want you to be happy and successful, and to get you off of your feet if you're having a hard time. That is love. That is care. That is also a form of internal happiness being shared with you. You can share your happiness. Another thing for me that, you know, was a very big journey was accepting happiness after immense pain. Because after that suicidal thought, and after the death of my father, and after the death of my best friend, after, you know, financial crises with my family, all these different issues that have come up in my life, and especially after the death of my father, I would look at my partner and I would be like, I'm never gonna experience happiness again. And I'm never gonna feel the same way about really good news ever again, because he's not here to share it with me. And Landon, luckily, I love that man more than life itself, but he looked me in the face and he was like, that's just not true. I understand your pain. I understand why you're saying that, but it's just not true. You're gonna look at the face of your baby when they're born, even though you feel like they don't have a grandfather, and you're gonna know that that angel is looking over you in that delivery room. And those are the things that you need to remind yourself, because happiness after immense amounts of pain, sorry for the emotion in my voice, but yeah, like, happiness after immense amounts of pain is still valid. It's still so incredibly valuable in your life to allow yourself to just be happy. It's so hard sometimes to just let yourself be happy. There's so many times where we want to suffer, or we want to accept that the pain is going to be the most important thing in our life. And I'm not sitting here taking that away from you. You know, it probably is the most important thing in your life at the moment. And maybe even when you look back in your journey, that will be the point that was the most important in your life. But that doesn't make it your entire story. And the same with any life situation or frustration that happened to you. It does not make it the entire story. Whether you went to jail, whether you were abused, whether your mom died, whether anything happened to you, if you were raped, anything, you are not just that, okay? You are so much more than that, and your happiness is from your own journey, your own battle against these things that have happened to you in your life, and you are absolutely capable of that, even though your pain is valid. It is, but give it its moment and walk forward. You can take your pain with you, but you cannot let it drag you down and stop you from moving forward. And with that, I say, finding the supportive people in your life, like I mentioned before, knowing the limits of who actually does and does not care about you, and keeping them in your life and being open with them and accepting of their pain also, that is what creates a circle of trust, of love, of respect, and of shared happiness. Kindness, to me, is another form of happiness. Kindness towards other people, kindness to yourself, kindness to the horrible things that have happened to you even. Let's say I look back and I looked at my bullies with anger. I could take that anger and carry it with me for the rest of my life. And I can choose to be a bully as an adult. I can choose to be a bad sister, a bad friend, a bad mother in the future. I can choose to do all that. Or I can choose to look back and say, you know what? We were just kids. We didn't know better. And I'm sure that they know better now. And I know I know better now. And we're gonna, you know, not do that with our own kids. And that's all we can do. And that, to me, is kindness to myself and kindness to my bullies and kindness to my future children even. Because teaching them that way of thinking also removes pain from those experiences for them as well. Because I know for me personally, my parents telling me, those are people's insecurities, they feel this way and this way, I might not have been 100% okay with that lecture in the moment, but I know that it allowed me the space to not let it get the best of me. Because when I look back on my story, I don't think that the bullying was the one thing that developed me. I don't think it really affected me that much at all, except accepting people for their own insecurities. What really changed me was my own pressure on myself. And when I removed that pressure and removed the entire pressure of the universe that I swore was attached to it, I freedom and just, I could breathe. It's all because I chose not to beat myself up, really. I got all these things because I chose to accept my own power, my own weirdness even, and love myself anyways. A lot of times when I was being told, oh, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't dress this way, you shouldn't say that, was because I was just a little odd and people didn't understand me. And that's okay. Not everyone is meant to understand you, but some people will. And if you allow yourself that openness to, you know, maybe somebody has a question for you or has a shared interest and you allow yourself that shared kindness to talk about it, maybe you make a friend. Maybe you find someone in your life who then can become more supportive in your circle. It is that choice of happiness, kindness, and optimism that really drives you forward on a daily basis. Every single day, life is gonna kick your ass. Every single fucking day, no matter what. All these different things are gonna happen. And it can go from as little to as extreme as you want. But what you do about it and how you handle it and how you face that stress is what makes a happy person different than a person who just lives miserably. And I really think that that's an internal battle that everyone can do. Everyone on this planet can take a look at themselves and reframe their way of thinking so that they can just be more happy in general, no matter what life throws at you. So we will talk next week. Focus on your internal happiness and your internal peace. I love you guys. Follow the podcast page on Instagram at Talk About It With Emmy. I personally am on social media at Emmy the Writer. You can find me on pretty much everything. And if you wanted to check out the website, it's emmythewriter.com. You can check out my written content and even podcast episodes on there. A quick reminder to please leave a 5-star review on iTunes and share the podcast with your friends and family. You guys really are the success of the show. It is for fun, but if something comes out of it and I can educate and help a few people along the way, I would love that. I am so excited to have this opportunity to talk about these things with you guys. So please comment on all the social medias and give me your feedback because I love to hear your stories as well. And if you have any happiness journeys that you'd like to share, go ahead and DM me at Talk About It With Emmy. We will talk soon. Peace out.